welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. It is Thursday, March 23rd, coming off of a 30-minute viewing at practice Wednesday, the third practice of the spring with the coaches' clinic this weekend. So ample opportunities to watch the Fighting Irish on the spring practice field. And guys, yesterday, Pete, you and I split up offense, defense, shared a lot of thoughts that I had in our instant analysis about the defense, but what were some of your biggest takeaways from that?
Yeah, just I think the format of practice was interesting. You know, it's always curious to me, what is the staff emphasizing? You know, when Van Gorder was here, you saw a lot of work on turnover, stripping the ball, and, you know, there was a sort of, they had stations and the defense would rotate through, and it was all turnover based. Obviously, that didn't really take. But, you know, yesterday when we're out there and we see them emphasizing tackling with the defensive skill position players, I thought that was kind of interesting, because that's not something that I feel like I've seen a whole lot of, if ever, in a practice. And it showed. I mean, and that group needs a lot of work. Now, to their defense, I think people have to remember they weren't a good tackling team last year. And then they did no tackling for 4 months. Right. And then they all went on spring break. And then they came back and put on pads. So the notion that they would be very good after being bad and then not doing it at all for 4 months, I think, is a little bit far-fetched. But it shows that, one, they have a lot of work to do, and the coaches, I think, are serious about getting that work done. So those two things are positives.
And I do think it'll continue. I think Brian Kelly even kind of let us know without telling us straight up that we didn't tackle well. I found us soft in practice. I'm sure that was part of the review from the remaining defensive coaches. I'm sure Mike Elston, Todd Light, guys just say, you know, we didn't tackle well, and maybe the reason we didn't tackle well is we used to make fun of it last year on the podcast. They talk about tagging off and thudding and
we did
whizzing, but they whiz, yeah, instead of hit. And, you know, I understand, look, he can't, we've made comments about Tom Herman when he was at Houston having bloody Tuesdays. You're not going to end up doing that at Notre Dame, because it's the modern world, and there's too many people reporting on all the injuries that happen at Notre Dame, unlike Houston, where they can be cast aside as commodities for the next player and the next coach. But they're going to have to tackle more this spring, and they'll probably carry it in August. And I bet it shows on the field, because they were a poor tackling team.
Well, to me, the greatest thing I heard yesterday, that it was an emphasis on fundamentals over scheme, which a lot of times sounds like coaches talk, but under the circumstances, it's absolutely critical, because Brian Van Gorder was skipping position drills. You just can't do that. You can't do that on this level. And so, as much as people don't want to hear, oh, you know, fundamentals, they're not implementing their scheme yet, you absolutely have to do that, because they were poor in so many areas of fundamental defensive play in particular, that you have to do that. So if you're starting from scratch and kind of starting behind where you would expect to, and again, that's on Brian Kelly. He never should have let that happen with his previous defensive coordinator. But that's where they are, and so I thought that was a good emphasis to hear.
Let me go back to a quote that Todd Light said on National Signing Day when we were talking about. I asked him, okay, Mike Elko comes in. He's more of a safety guy. It leaves you to just do the corners. How does that sort of change the way spring practice is going to go and how things are going to break down? This is a quote. Last year, because we had so many young guys playing, I was very focused on scheme and strategy and opponent scout film. I didn't get to watch as much one-on-one with the players as I wanted to. This year, with Mike Elko taking the safeties, it will allow me to watch a lot more one-on-one and really dig down into the technique part of it. And I think the players will really get a lot out of that and really benefit from that.
Unbelievable.
No kidding. I mean, that's a huge fundamental shift in terms of what the defense needs to get done, how they're going to do it. I think it all sort of traces back to Mike Elko, and that's, if there's a reason to be optimistic about Notre Dame's defense, even if the players are basically the same, it's the fact that Mike Elko is a massive, massive upgrade at coordinator.
I have to quit being surprised by comments about last year's drawbacks,
oh, yeah,
and fatal flaws of practice and everything, because, yeah, it's, I guess when you don't practice fundamentals, you can't expect them to present on the field, right? It was a vexing situation to monitor the entire time.
And, on the NFL level, yes. On the college level, absolutely not. They're too young, and they haven't had enough.
They were really young last year.
Yeah,
they
just haven't had enough experience. Well, the other thing we learned yesterday, in theory, is that the defensive line has more talent than we realized, which I think the comment by Brian Kelly. I mean, I try to take stuff on face value. I immediately went to my depth chart and started going down by the four positions. I'm like, who could he mean here? Does he mean him or him?
Maybe there's a silent commit of a maybe, fifth year graduate we don't know about.
Yeah, well, that could be. But what were your thoughts on that comment? Again, I do try to take it at face value. And as you said yesterday, they watch 1,000 right. hours more of practice than we do. And so I don't want to be cynical about it, but it's hard to see who those playmakers
My
are.
My take right on that was, you know, we said last podcast, we kind of made the comment, we all saw Micah Dutredway make one really athletic play in the Blue Goal game. I mean, Kelly's probably seen 15 last year. You know, and yeah. Pete talked about Elijah Taylor flashing against USC and Syracuse. They've probably seen Elijah Taylor flash consistently. You know, you talked to Mike Elson, he felt that...
He would have played more if he did.
He would have played, he? Yeah. That. Well, you said Mike Elson wanted to play him more, and I think maybe they do see these things. Now, the oddity of this is, of course, Taylor's not there. I don't want to make too much of Elijah Taylor not being there, but I think all three of us think he was kind of the guys we don't even seen anything of. He was the one that had some problems.
He would be that would be one of the names you'd think. Right. Oh, he's on the rise, except he's on crutches over there on the sideline.
Foot injury is a defensive lineman. I know we were told in July,
and the Jerron Jones foot injury, which can take an awful long time.
Justin Brent had the same injury and never played again at Notre Dame. So it's
a tough one.
It's going to be if Elijah Taylor was healthy and Brian Kelly had said we have more talent, I'd be like, okay, you know, the point you guys are making is like you could pick out some guys. I think that Julian Okwara is really interesting. Obviously, we know about Dalen Hayes.
Kareem is interesting.
Is interesting. Don't really know a whole lot about him. Tim, pretty sure you mentioned Jerry Tiller. He looked as good as he looked.
Yeah, I thought he did. And I just want to, you know, Duke Treadway, when I saw him in that high school all-star game, that was a guy running around and had no idea how to play football. But you saw some athleticism, and he's got a great frame. Now, is he starting to learn? I'm not going to say that. But when Brian Kelly says something like that, I look at a dude Treadway and look at the frame, know that he has some athleticism, and maybe he's learning now how to play football, use his hands, do all the fundamental things to be effective. I'm not saying that he is that guy, but maybe that's a guy.
If this was 12 months ago, would I be saying Jay Hayes, too? I mean, he might have gotten lost in the Van Gorder shuffle last year. You know, that's a guy we'd think that. He's a senior now.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable.
Look, I need to see this in September.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I guess there's a bit of optimism there, but still, I mean.
We're
trying to find
that.
How much is Saturday? Can we just see it on Saturday?
Brian Kelly can use hyperbole. Let's hope in this instance there is a shred of evidence that is absolutely happening, because if they can stabilize the defensive line and improve from where they were last year, it's progress, because you do have a good linebacking core. You do have a whole bunch of quality corners, and I think they'll get it figured out on the back end of the defense. It's just in transition, because Tranquil's going to play up and back, and when he's back, they're not going to put him in difficult situations.
The offensive line, I watched some of that yesterday. That was curious to me in the sense that, you know, Tommy Kramer's still at right tackle, and Brian Kelly said that, you know, it's a bit of a rotation. Again, something we'll see on Saturday. If Liam Eichenberg doesn't take any first-team reps on Saturday, then we know that, okay, that they're actually moving in a direction there opposed to maybe battling it out. I still like Liam Eichenberg a lot. I mean, I think he looks like more of your prototypical tackle to me. Now, a year from now, when Mike McGlinchey is gone, Kramer could be playing right tackle, and Liam Eichenberg could be playing left tackle. I think that would be fine. But it was maybe more interesting to me to see Aaron Banks and Robert Hainsey with the second team. You don't really see a lot from freshmen in the fall, never mind as early enrollees. Hunter Bivin with a third team. There's not a whole lot to make of it. I mean, I think he's sort of a deep reserve guy for Notre Dame. That's not going to change. You know, Brian Kelly said that they want him to be like Mark Harrell. And if nobody got injured, we never would have seen Mark Harrell on the field. But he would have been more of an insurance policy. So I'm curious to see what happens there. I mean, we probably mentioned it on the podcast before that Bivin's brother is on staff in a supporting role at Western Kentucky. He's from down there. He's going to graduate. Ultimately, could pick up and leave as a grad transfer if he wanted to play. So I think that's just something to watch moving forward. But if they like Hainsey and Banks as much as it seems like they do, certainly you don't want to play them this
fall.
That's
why I think they would talk Divin into the, as much as he could talk Divin
Man,
into
I would,
staying.
You would hope so, because the second team is, you got the Kramer-Eichenberg guy who didn't win, Trevor Rulins with the twos, and then it's the two freshmen, and then Tristan Hodge, who is certainly active. I mean, that's a guy that has sort of the green light to play.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of other guys that I think are going to have the green light to play in that group. I mean, Boudreaux was down with the threes. So in that sense, Bivin, Hodge, maybe Rulin, and then the Kramer, Eichenberg.
The backup there will be the first guy to play, I think.
Yeah. Will you have seven good offensive linemen? Probably yes.
Right.
And that's like maybe eight.
I think they would love it if Bivin's the eighth.
Yeah.
A fifth-year senior that started.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's why you keep players like that.
Right,
that's why you keep the Mark Harrells.
So that's why I don't take the Stefferson comments at face value. I do take the Bivin comments at face value. He said we moved him to third team. He's taking one for the team right now. I could see that being true.
Yeah. And
I don't think he needs the reps that these guys are getting as much as he's a fifth-year guy. They don't know where they're going
to
play him yet.
If you talk to players, like just running into them on campus who are old during spring practice, The attitude is basically like, all right, this is like spring practice is not for those guys. Like Mike McGlinchey doesn't really need a whole lot of work. Quentin Nelson, same way. Bivin, probably the same way too. Banks and Hainsey, Eichenberg, Kramer, they need every rep they can get. So I think it's a healthy way to look at it.
Well, another thing we learned yesterday was that not only with Chase Claypool, not only can you not avoid a one-on-one tackle when he's the tackler, but you can't tackle him when it's one-on-one either. So, you know, he's valuable on either side of the football. And Brian Kelly has determined they need him on offense, and I think that that's great.
My goal is to not jinx him like I did Trumbetti and Dexter Williams the last 2 years. So I'm not going to talk about him. You guys talk about him.
You'll be glad to talk about him.
His glistening helmet in the sun, right?
It's amazing. Even inside. Yeah, he looks great. He was running with the first team offense yesterday with Ekumenia St. Brown and Chris Fink. The notion that he would move to defense to be a backup defensive end when you're a starting receiver, that makes no sense. I mean, Devin Sudso could not get a freaking hand on him in one-on-one drills. So it's that guy's going to play a lot. I hope that he has the offense down because he is a really unique weapon at that size. I mean, you should not be able to make people grasp for air at 6'4.5", 225 pounds. That's something that 5'10", 170 guys do.
He's a difference maker. He looks like a difference maker. And I know Alizé Jones, there's a lot of commentary about where he is right now in the pecking order with coming back from the suspension, but that's another one. They need those guys. They need guys like that because they have plenty. And Equanimee St. Brown is one too. But I'm taking him for granted at this point in the spring. He's a player that's going to be good enough to probably consider making a decision at the end of next year.
Oh, for sure.
So I don't ever want to. He's the given, and I think they need guys. If it's Claypool, St. Brown, Alizé Jones, Durham Smythe,
that's pretty good.
And Josh Adams.
I mean, potentially
and then you're throwing
that's pretty
in,
good.
You know, a guy. And then in 3rd and 13, Fink comes in for Smythe in those situations. That's
almost an antidote to the message board. Our guys look small. I mean, there's no way you could get away with saying that at that point.
Well, and I think stays in the mix because, again, yesterday if you watch the tackling drills, they could barely get a hand on him, let alone tackle him in certain
instances.
Don't
you love him as the fifth guy?
Yeah,
absolutely. Not the first guy like
USC. No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he should be getting, if there are 80 offensive snaps, he should be getting 20.
Right. And then he was really effective.
Yeah. But he was good by the end of last year. He's getting a lot more than that. I made a comment on this in instant analysis, and I want to get your feedback on it regarding Brandon Wimbush and what Brian Kelly said about, you know, not design runs with him, but more option stuff. And if you've seen Chip Long's offense, it will also be option, pull the ball back, throw the football, which is really exciting football. I think that's a really important dimension added to the offense. Wimbush is listed at 226. Kizer was listed at 230 last year.
Plus, you can add 10.
I would say 10 to 15, probably. In retrospect, we never said that. Did we ever say that during the season last year?
No, but then you see him at Pro Day.
I know, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's wise. I think it's playing to his skills. I love the pass off, the option read.
I do, too. I think that's great.
Well, I'll tell you.
That's an Urban Meyer
That was in the original Kelly offense, actually, when he used to go fast and everything was scattered and Dane Chris was out there.
Yeah.
It's just, I can't even remember those days anymore. Remember Notre Dame's tempo in the first spring we went to? Everybody's flying around. They're going as fast as humanly possible. And all of a sudden it was...
Look, I remember Denard Robinson throwing the read option pass against Notre Dame in 2010 and be like, oh my God, this is the greatest play I've ever seen.
It was good. He was a bit of a threat.
But Memphis' starting quarterback, do you know how many rushing yards he had last year? Minus 70. So I think Brandon Wimbush will probably have more than that. He gained...
Different style of athlete.
Yeah. He gained 173 yards.
Right, and the sacks took away. The
sacks ended up pushing him negative. Well, Brandon Wimbush hit DeShone Kizer's gain of 644.
Probably good if he doesn't.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it would be much better if he did not. Unless he's injured. That would be bad.
Unless it comes in spurts of like, every game he has a 70-yard touchdown run. Yeah. Something wrong with that.
Yeah, that's okay. But it seems a lot less... quarterback run driven than what Brian Kelly was running last year. I mean, just look at Kizer's carries, the way they broke down. And I always felt this way with Everett Golson in 2014. When the quarterback was running a lot, it sort of had an air of desperation about it. Like they didn't know what else to do. And you look at Virginia Tech, 16 carries, Stanford, 15 carries, Texas, 13 carries. Those were his high carries of the game. And that was like, just please do something. We need help. Whereas in the wins, Nevada, Army, Miami. What's the one I'm missing? There was a fourth
terrible,
win.
Terrible comment, but Syracuse.
He only averaged 8.5 carries a game. That was much more balanced. Okay, your quarterback, throw it first, run it second.
There's some sterling wins you just listed.
Yeah, I know. It's
Nevada, Army, Syracuse. And
Miami. But don't you think, like, big picture, when the quarterback's running, like there were times where Everett Golson was like, okay, just... go do something.
Oh, you did a whole study on it.
Especially Kizer. Yeah. That was especially true of Kizer. I find that to be boring football.
They desperately needed Kizer. They didn't trust the offensive line to get short yardage. He was the short yardage. You did a whole breakdown of it. His success rate on the third
was really good.
Yeah. Compared to the others were bad.
Hopefully they have a little bit more of a balance with Chip Long and what he's doing. And we had a question about that in the second segment in terms of, you know, philosophy and culture and all that stuff. But I would not expect the offense to rely so much on the quarterback to just bail them out of stuff every other series.
Yeah, and that's good. And that's good creative offensive college football.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
That's why they needed a refresh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why Chip Long's here in the first place.
All right, well, we'll get into Chip Long and questions pertaining to that in segment two.
Welcome back to segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider. Burning up the boards, the first from N. Venturini. Thoughts about Kelly's culture comments. The Kelly playbook from which Long chooses, is that really sufficient? Maybe I can't realistically expect anything more. At least a little concerning. There's a lot of questions in there. I think he's worried that it's going to be same old, same old.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you could get alarmed by what Kelly said yesterday, where it's, you know, my offense, and we've sort of had this discussion on previous podcasts about, okay, whose playbook is Chip Long calling the plays from? But I think from a rational perspective would also be, if they weren't very similar-minded offensively, Chip Long would not have been hired. Also, there are only so many ways to call, like, a slip screen and a run-pass option, and, like, he's not reinventing the wheel here.
As long as he calls the plays, that's what matters, right?
Yeah, it's not like he's going to come in and be like, well, I call all my plays after 2 seconds on the play clock. Like, they're not going to go that fast. So I was not concerned at all. I barely had an antenna up yesterday when that comment came out.
I totally agree. It didn't register with me because I do think it's sufficient because they are cut from the same cloth. I mean, everything you said there, Pete, is absolutely correct. I mean, that's why Chip Long's here, because they share a similar philosophy. The exciting part is that he brings some dimensions that Brian Kelly didn't have within his spread offense, a little bit more, you know, tight ends. Brian Kelly's talking about 4 tight ends running around out there, you know, yesterday. You didn't hear that kind of thing before. It'll be more power football. Brian Kelly's offense has been pretty darn good the last 3 years. The problem last year was they weren't good in the red zone. They're basically a 35-point per game offense, and I think Long brings the dimensions that we're missing from Brian Kelly's offense. So I like the combination of the two.
Quick point on that. Watching practice yesterday, something that I noticed was basically the quarterbacks are taking snaps under center, not actually with a center. But the running back is lined up in sort of an I formation. And there's a slot back motioning across the backfield. Now, some of that is similar to what Brian Kelly did with motion. Some of it is different because you never saw somebody, a quarterback, taking snaps under center.
Right.
The running back, instead of being offset in a shotgun, was immediately behind. Because at first I saw him like, are they running the pistol? Like, oh no, the quarterback's actually taking a snap in a crouched position. So that might be a little bit of a variance from what we've seen. Now, is it philosophically 180 degrees from what they did last year? No, it's just a little different, and that's why Chipmunk's there.
Okay, and the concern also out there is that, you know, Brian Kelly's going to say, no, don't call this, call that.
That's the concern.
I don't have a huge concern over that. I really don't.
I think the biggest concern for Notre Dame fans is, will it be more physical than last year because they were soft? They don't like third and two. Oh my gosh, we have to spread five guys out and pass because there's no way in the world we're going to move this defensive lineman out of the way and get 2 yards. That's obviously the number one complaint, right?
Yeah.
For the last 10 years.
As it should be.
Yes, as it should be. Number two, I think they just want Chip Long to call the plays, which, as Pete just said, Brian Kelly's going to have his hand in there a little bit, but it would still be nice if his hand in there is the game plan more so than
he hasn't called a place for the last 5 years.
Right, so
I don't think that part of it changes.
So then the other thing, though, to go out your point about the tight ends and running backs quickly, Memphis's tight ends and running backs last year, they basically played two tight ends and four running backs for lack of looking down at everybody that ever got a snap. Their tight ends and running backs combined for about 90 receptions, 900 yards, and 10 touchdowns. Notre Dame's combined running backs and tight ends caught 45 passes, so half as many, and were only targeted 66 times. So Memphis's tight ends and running backs caught almost 30 more passes than Notre Dame's were ever thrown to over the entire course of the season. So there is a little bit of a difference there, and he has the tight ends and running backs to pull it off.
I think the concern with Brian Kelly, how involved he's going to be, all sort of goes back to the NC State game more than maybe the third shorts, where it's like they had a run first game plan, sure, and then Kelly changed it, and it's like, no, we're doing this instead. Like, does something like that happen again? Hopefully not. All right, our next question is from, this is an interesting one, Coach Nick Altstor. And he wants to know if Nico Fertitta will get a fresh start under Mike Elko and what his role might be in next year's defense.
That's a good question. I think, well, I mean, fresh start, he was contributing at the end of last year, but I mean, I get the question. And I think Nico Fertitta, I've got 180 degrees on this, haven't I? When you're wrong, you're wrong. The kid's a competitor. He's a great tackler. He understands defense. I love the kid. I mean, obviously, he's a core special teams guy. You have to be careful how you use him defensively in a different way, the same way you don't want to misuse Tranquil and put him in bad situations, the same way with Fertitta. But I don't know what exactly that role is, because you do have a lot of young, dynamic, really talented athletes back there at safety. But this kid's not going to be denied, and I'm sure he's in the mix in some capacity.
You know, Elston last year at the end started getting him involved a lot more once the other team was, their offense was inside the Irish red zone. It's smart because it's not as much ground to cover if he does have to cover against play action passes. Look, my favorite hit of the year was his against USC. He was penalized. It was great.
You can't play the first half against Temple.
That's good.
Yeah, it's true.
That's a great hit. It was such a good hit, he's not allowed to play the first half. That's how I look at that. No, I like his approach. Obviously, the number one thing is he's going to be, you don't want Tranquil on island, you don't want Nico Fertitta on island. You want him going downhill.
Right.
All four special teams, and get him in there to hit some people.
It was such a great hit. Perfect. They're not allowing him to play 9 months later.
That's right. Yeah. That's how I look at it.
You know, I was thinking about this question. I'm thinking, okay, you've got maybe athletically he's not, you know, your four-star, five-star guy, probably sort of a gym rat training guy who just loves to work and loves film. You got a new defensive coordinator who's coming in. He's probably in his ear, in his office, who works with the safeties. I could see Elko really liking him.
No.
are you going to get into a situation maybe like Joe Schmidt was in when there was a new staff change? Athletically, he wasn't the biggest guy, fastest guy, but he worked really hard.
Fertitta's not going to start. He's not going to be a full-time player.
And nor would have Schmidt if there wasn't an injury to Jarrett Grace.
Right.
But you just wonder if Fertitta's going to plant a bug in Elko's ear, and Elko's just like, I just really like this guy. I can't justify not playing him more, and that's sort of how things
work out. If he deserves to play and works his way on the field, then that's a positive thing. But again, Elko's smart enough not to put a kid in us. That was the first thing he said when we met him. I mean, you don't watch the film on Sunday and complain about what a kid can't do and then keep putting him back in that situation. I don't think he'd do that with
him. So no more Jay Hayes covering a wheel route?
Similar to that, yes.
That's a pro-style defense.
Yeah. NYC Irish, how concerned should I be that Elazay Jones and Kevin Stefferson are running with the threes in spring practice so far?
Concerned. I mean, you should be concerned.
And don't believe anything that's said about, we're trying to give other guys...
Yeah, I think there's open practice on Saturday. You guys will be out there. And if Elazay Jones, once they get to 11-on-11, is taking a lot of first-team reps, don't be concerned. If he's not in the mix at all, like he was with Tempo on Wednesday, where Tyler Luatua is getting the third team reps and Elazay Jones is off to the side, then be concerned. I'm not really sure what to make of that and how that's all going to shake out. It's the same story with Stefferson, where if walk-ons are getting reps ahead of you, and I'm not talking about Chris Fink, I'm talking about Austin Webster, then... There's a legit concern there. We'll see. But Saturday, I think, is sort of a, all right, we'll see. You know, you'll come away from Saturday probably with, you may come away from Saturday with the same concerns, but they just will be more serious.
For some reason, my hunch is you'd be concerned about Stefferson and that Jones is working his way back from last year's problems. I don't know why I have that hunch. I look at Stefferson... It's not true that Kevin Stefferson doesn't need X reps because he's not cross training anywhere else. That's just made up. He's not Jerry Rice.
No, of course he needs a rep.
Yeah, I do think Elazay Jones. It would be weird if he's still kind of being punished. Like as Tim pointed out for the first practice last year, like the seniors always kind of go through tempo first, right? It's just going to be the way it is. Here's our pecking order. I would like to see him running with the first or second string in tempo, hopefully at least. I'm not sure how important tempo is. Sometimes they do pull guys out to talk to them and stuff like that. Maybe he was bad at his Sunday conditioning test because he went out Saturday night before coming home. You know, like there's all these little things that could be involved. That's why
a third. I was going to say there are two factors. That could be a third factor.
That's the third one you look at.
I mean,
at.
That's pulling out of there. You have no idea.
No, I have no idea, but that's what I mean. There could be 100 reasons why.
Right. So I'm narrowed down to two. One, they're nicked up in some capacity, or two, there's a concern academically and... therefore, they can't afford to give even tempo reps to somebody that they're not sure is going to ultimately get the reps.
All right, next question from Adam Schutt. Name the most important player on the team, not named Wimbush, Morgan, McGlinchey, or Nelson.
Wimbush.
Josh Adams.
Morgan. I would have him in my top five-ish.
I think Josh Adams has to be the guy we saw against Virginia Tech and USC last year, where he's... Mm-hmm. 20 carries, 100, 150 yards. He had 170 yards against USC. I know one was one large carry, but I think they need a very reliable running back. He struggled until November last year after being great against Texas.
Let's see. I mean, Tillery comes to mind right away.
Tillery,
you know, I mean, you can't go another year on the interior in the situation that you were in, in 2016. I hope the little glimpse that I saw yesterday, I hope that that was a very objective observation on my part as opposed to hoping. I think it is because I've been as critical of Jerry Tillery as anybody.
What about Dalen Hayes? Well, you still feel about...
Yeah.
You know, just throwing it... They need... He's a guy.
I mean, Dalen Hayes would be sort of the number two in that group.
The difference maker type that could exist. I guess I don't see Tillery as a difference maker. I think he could be very good. And I think Adams could be great, and I think Dalen Hayes is a...
There are moments, like, I think Jerry Tillery can make some plays, which he did last year. I mean, there was a play he made against Michigan State where he played angry, blew this kid up in the backfield. I mean, he looked like a future pro. And then, you know, he just sort of vanished at times too. He needs to harness more of that. And if he does, I think he can be a great defensive end.
You got to be great 11 out of 12 games, though, to be
a
great defensive end.
I think he can be, all right, I'm sorry, defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he can be great. I think he can be sort of at the level of what you would, like, a player that would be part of a defense that is contending for the college football playoff.
I think scheme has a lot to do with it. And I think that he's going to be in a situation where he won gaps, increases gaps, and can be effective. Because he has such great length. I mean, he's got length. If he can get off the snap of the football, I think he can be very effective.
But he's, like, flexible, too, in a way that, like, Jerron Jones had great length but was not flexible.
Right.
And Jerry Tillery has some, like, flexibility. He has some
defensive end in him. Yes, I would agree with that.
Poor man's Malik McDowell. If you can get to that point, I think that is a great spot.
That would
great
be outstanding. Equanimeous St. Brown's a name I'd throw out there, too, because, I mean, that's a proven big time playmaker on offense that is really significant moving forward.
We should probably defer to all defensive names on this one.
Yeah,
really. Probably. I mean, right? If St. Brown's just the same as he was,
isn't it interesting?
He'll be fine.
Hey, isn't it interesting that last year at this time, and then going into last season, when we said 10 guys that Notre Dame cannot afford to lose, Sean Crawford was at the top of the list, and you still, of course, want Sean Crawford on the field.
Well, they went 4-8, so we might have been right.
Well, that's true. No, that's true.
And the defense the year before couldn't play nickel.
No, that's true. But I think we all agree that there's some cornerback talent
out
there.
That's a good point.
You know,
that's
that good. you could compensate.
That's a fair way to look
time.
At that. Yeah. Dip 98. If Tranquil stays at strong safety at least for the first four games, who starts at free safety? Is Nick Coleman truly the leading candidate at this point, or is Elliott more likely?
There's no leading candidate now. I mean, we just observed that Coleman was taking some skeleton reps at safety yesterday. That's open-ended. I think Todd Light would say, I want Jalen Elliott to win that job. Studs still, I don't know. We still don't know exactly how they will align their safeties.
Yeah, I think Light said Studs still would be strong and Elliott would be free.
Right.
But that was on signing day, and they could have changed their mind three times since then.
Coleman, that should be people should be kind of excited about that. I understand the bad plays he made last year, but players do get better. And that's a kid that they threw into a situation that he probably wasn't ready for, but he had probably shown enough to warrant them throwing him in that tough situation. I like the move to safety. You can certainly afford to do it with the talent you now have at cornerback. I'm open-minded about him because I think there's a football player in there. I really liked what I saw coming out of high school, and I want to be open-minded about him while still understanding that, wow, he has a long way to go based upon his play last year.
I think your best point in there is that there is no leading candidate right now, though. Right? They're checking him out. He's a veteran, and maybe Studs, Dylan Elliott didn't pick up exactly what they needed to pick up in the first, when they were going over the defense, right? I mean, there's a little bit of install involved. Maybe Coleman picks it up better.
Yeah, I mean, I got the sense from Brian Kelly yesterday that they want to move Drew Tranquil to linebacker at the Rover position, but they can't afford to do it because I think Elliott and Studs still both have a lot to prove to the new staff right now, and if they had already proved it, then those would be your starting two safeties, and Drew Tranquil would be rotating through Rover, and we probably wouldn't be talking about Nick Coleman.
It's fair to say to this question, though, that all three of us, when we saw Nick Coleman with the first string safety, the opening practice, were surprised, right?
Very surprised.
So that's why it's a legitimate.
Yeah,
that's a really legitimate
absolutely.
Question.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Swarbrick for Prez. As fans, what proof do we have that Chip Long's offense is going to be that much better with BK behind the curtain? Chip Long's offense sounds like what BK promised to bring to ND, but never quite delivered with the fast pace and multiple formations and personnel.
There's no proof. I mean, we certainly don't.
I've seen 80 minutes of spring practice.
Yeah, we're not crowning Chip Long as the savior, but they don't need a savior per se on the offensive side of the ball. They need an upgrade and a fine tuning more than anything. It's on the defensive side of the ball that you need the overhaul. But I don't know. I think fast pace is that was something that Brian Kelly promised, and we talked about this before about how, you know, you'd see it at the start of the game and then it just kind of disappears. I think Chip Long's track record indicates that there's a really good chance that they'll stay with that pace as the game progresses.
I think that his offense is all about putting people in conflict, both in terms of getting aligned because they're moving so fast, and then the run pass option, which you know, Notre Dame does a lot of. I don't want it to come across as like, well, this is his new revelation. Brian Kelly's offense has had RPOs for years.
Tommy Rees had them.
Yeah, but this is just going to be run in a different way, and I think they're going to be much more aggressive about it. I mean, it wasn't something that I thought was real attacking. It was more like, okay, what is the defense doing? We'll do that instead. So instead of maybe reacting to the defense from a numbers game, I think this is going to take the fight to the defense, and that will be, it might sound small, but I think that will be a big difference.
I think tempo is the key to it. I'm fully on board with, after covering Notre Dame, trying to defend tempo. I know they've gotten better at it, but they had to spend a whole spring trying to figure out how to get better at it after 2014.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
If you're doing it right, it is so much harder to stop an offense that does not have to sit there and check with me and check with that and check with this. And then if you have the players to go play and you trust your system and going fast is your other weapon, I think it's fantastic.
You know what that check with me stuff is? That's boring football.
It is boring. It's so boring. I can't win. How about check with me followed by a 3-yard gain on quarterback power? That's as you said. That's
put them together and I'm falling asleep.
Yeah, it's like a tempo becomes essentially another. It's either an enhancement to the playbook or like puts a 13th or 12th player on the field for you.
Yes, that's
because eventually you're going to run into a bust, and then if you can take advantage of that, that's when you're going to put an 80-yard touchdown. All right, this is kind of an interesting question. Is our last one from Mac Attack, and he says, how much of the basketball team's success is attributable to Mike Bray's relationship to the players, and do you think Brian Kelly can ever be that same way?
Well, I think it starts with his ability to recruit the type of players that he knows he wants and needs to be successful. And therefore, you have great harmony within the program. Now, not across the board, because we've talked about, you know, a player from this year's team that certainly wasn't harmonious with the process. And there have been others in the past. But I think it starts with recruiting the type of player that you like. And as far as Bray's relationship with athletes, I mean, he's basically on an island pretty much by himself, maybe a handful of people that are like him. He has an amazing ability. His patience is, I can't even comprehend it, because I certainly didn't have that when I was between the white lines. So, I can't, although I will say he can be tougher with players and people realize he tends to do that behind closed doors or in a loud arena where most people can't hear him, but reporters sitting across from him know exactly what he's saying to a player. But he's a unique character, and I mean, not everybody can be like him. Brian Kelly can't be Mike Bray. It's a bad fit to try to do something like that.
And that's like, that's a more of a compliment to Bray than a
right. Kelly, no, absolutely.
Because most basketball coaches cannot be like Mike Bray.
Absolutely.
Never mind the fact that football is a huge industry at Notre Dame, and you have 85 to 100 players opposed to 12 to 15.
Mike Bray has 12 players.
Yes.
At least four, require zero maintenance whatsoever. None.
Yeah.
Bonzi Colson, Steve Astoria, BJ Beecham, Matt Farrell. Thanks, guys, for showing up and trying as hard as you possibly can every minute.
Right.
So they don't require any. Other guys are dedicated young guys that aren't playing, so he just has to keep them motivated. And then there's the small group that he has to reach, and he reached about 3 out of 4 of them this year. So it's an easier thing for Mike Bray. You're right. Look, Mike Bray's unique from two basketball coaches, so we can even separate that. But Brian Kelly cannot have the pulse on all of his players like that. It's a basketball coach's job, kind of, to have a pulse on 9 or 10 of your players, right?
Yeah, the other ones like kind of don't matter. Your assistant coaches have to give you what Mike Bray gives you as a head coach of basketball.
Coach,
Bray does have a great way of, but most of the time when he hits his junior year and he needs him, that kid's ready to play. Now, Gebben wasn't quite that guy this year, although he thought he was, though.
I mean,
yeah,
Bray
he thought he was. And he ended the season on an uptick, and so that's positive. But Bray is, I've said this and written this a million times, he's the ultimate confidence giver. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know how he does it. Hell, after games, he stands there in front of the student body and tells them how great they are, and they stink.
You're right. Actually, the crowd was fabulous.
I mean, the Notre Dame student body has no idea how to rate. You know, yeah, for Duke and North Carolina.
Bridge out! Bridge out! Cliff, keep going. Might as well get it out now. Yeah. Duke and North Carolina.
That's the only time they're a legitimate student body crowd. I grew up in the old Athletic and Convocation Center, and I know what great student bodies and great crowds sound like, and that ain't one of them.
We could put a train going off a bridge GIF into the podcast. I would do it right now. We can't, so we'll just wrap it up on that note. We'll be back Monday, March 27th. There's an open practice this weekend. A bunch of recruiting stuff to talk about. O'Malley, you have somebody you want to close with before we get out of here?
I think that when the student body shows up for the North Carolina game next February for the first time all season, they're going to be mad at Priester.
I want to see a big cut-out fat head of Tim Priester. They're waving it around.
Well, they won't be there in December for it, so don't worry about it.
The student body has no idea who I am.
All right. On that note, you've been listening to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. I'm Pete Sampson, as always, joined by Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley. Thanks for listening.